Hot round! Red 7, red 7, red 7! Don!
What?
Red 7!
I don't know what red 7 means.
Hot round!
I don't. What is hot round?
Will you just go stand on the other side, please?
Billy Bob! This is it! The man who got us here, you ready?
You don't think that lame ass play where I run downfield and act like I'm lost is gonna work, do you?
Then he pivots, fakes, chucks the big bomb halfway down the field to our hopefully still wide open tailback. I call it the annexation of Puerto Rico.
Booyah! That's what we call a sack lunch. Nom, 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 nom.
I need that ball. Get me the ball.
You need the ball.
Get me the ball.
Get you the ball.
Are you going to get me the
ball? I'll get you the ball.
I hope he didn't kill somebody.
Because we know when we add up all those inches, that's going to make the difference between winning and losing. Between living and dying.
I got a whole lot of money. Y'all it for me. Bottle key popping that water bad jacket. Yeah. It's a party.
Welcome into 11 Personnel. Nick Roush and Adam Luckett here to talk some ball with you in the penultimate week of the 2021 college football season. Penultimate is a wonderful word, Adam Luckett, that we don't get to use enough. And I'm happy to this week because the penultimate week in college football means that Kentucky is going to kick the hell out of some no-name team. And that no-name team goes by New Mexico State.
Before we get into the fighting Aggies from Las Cruces, you want to talk about a Mill Wagner first or the Vanderbilt game? Let's just talk recruiting. Let's just get that out of the way.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. We'll do that because it's kind of an uncomfortable conversation, if you will. So we'll do the kind of ugly. We can get maybe the ugly second half of Vanderbilt because I know some folks were a little upset.
I have takes on the Vanderbilt game. I have some takes for some people.
The first take that I have, though, is for you, Adam Luckett. I got to commend you. You were at a wedding, and you were sending me texts as though you were sitting next to me in the press box. I don't know. I don't think there was much dancing getting done over on Luckett's.
I multitasked a little bit, but I'm a crazy person, Nick. I can't get away. No matter what I'm doing, it's like the Sopranos line, like where he got from the Godfather. It's like, just when I thought I was out, they pulled me back in. And it's just, I can't do it. I don't know why. It just something just got a bug inside me I can't get rid of.
Oh, love the like just getting the random. Well, Dort doesn't feel like tackling the day.
But anyway, let's get to Wagner here. We're pumping out a few kind of like month out National Signing Day stuff this week on the site. First one rolling out Wednesday afternoon. Then we'll have some stuff – or Tuesday afternoon, excuse me. We'll have some stuff. And I've kind of wrote about just where the offense stands from a recruiting standpoint. And they've really checked all of the boxes when you start digging into personnel, filling needs. They obviously missed on Gavin Wimsett, but even taking that into consideration, everything else was knocked out of the park. Like, you're getting Destin Wade, you're going to let him play quarterback, but that kid's going to be a bona fide player somewhere on your offense, whether I think it's probably going to be kind of a flex tight end. So that's a player. You don't really need running backs. You look at where you're at right now.
Yeah. Yeah. You got Lavelle Wright. You got
zero seniors on the team. Chris Rodriguez is a draft decision, but you got some young guys. You got some balance, class balance there. Receiver, you had to hit on, and you had to hit on it well. Dane Key was the most important player, I think, in this class. You hit Dane Key. You get Travion Longmire, 4-star. You get Jordan Anthony from Mississippi. And then you're in the running for Barrion Brown, top 50 prospect. You couldn't – on top of what you did last year in receiver, Chris Lewis, Chauncey Magwood. Can't do much better than that. Like, that's going to be a position of strength for the team here in, like, 2 years. Tight end, like they're becoming tight end you. Josh Caddis is a guy I'm really high on, even though he's one of the lower-ranked guys in the class. You look at where they fit in, Isaiah Cummings, Jordan Dingle, joining Upshaw and Brendan Bates next year. I mean, they're stacked at tight end. Offensive guard, they're pretty good. Like, you're going to lose some guys, but you land Graham Bingham, who was one of your top targets.
Mm-hmm.
Jagger Burton's going to be ready to play next year. You could return Quentin Wilson, plus your starters, Horsey,
yeah,
Eli Cox. Like, you're great at guard, and you got to figure out center, but you can figure that out. And then tackle, you were looking great.
Right.
You had Keontae Goodwin, 5-star. This is the guy, the top target in our class. But you had built-in insurance with him, with Emil Wagner. Because that was always, if you lost on Keontae, it was like, man, that sucks, but we got Emil Wagner. We're still in great shape at tackle. You lose Emil Wagner in Notre Dame, you lose your insurance. And if you could, you know, who knows what's going to – it's going to be – I know people are like talking about Keontae's recruitment, but it's really just – it's Alabama, Kentucky. Like, I don't care about the Florida State. Not worried about the Michigan State.
I actually kind of like A&M. That he's visiting random schools because, you know –
it's going to come down to December where he goes. Does he go to Alabama again or does he go to Kentucky again for a visit? Whoever wins out there is going to win the recruitment. I mean, that's what's – that's going to be the
Florida
end of
State.
Story.
I mean, you know, that's a fart in the wind. I mean, you know, good for him. He got to go watch a fun game, but that doesn't feel like there's a whole lot of meat and potatoes there.
Right. For Kentucky, you just name, image, likeness here. How big of a package could they put together for him?
Mm-hmm.
Come in, be a potential starter as a true freshman, potential impact player at Kentucky, you know, play a bunch of games before he goes to the NFL. You know, but a lot of it's going to be, do they get him one more time on campus? I think that's what that's going to come down to. So now you're looking at a situation where it's like, man, you had like, they're still going to have a really good class regardless, but it's, man, you know, that was a big opportunity that kind of slipped through your fingers, not getting Emil Wagner. And that's even like Nicholas Hall, I think, is a good looking prospect, but you know, tackles, you know, you could lose Rosenthal and Kennard off this team. And then you look at the tackle depth chart, it's not, there's not a lot of great options there.
Yeah. Flax hasn't looked good and limited action there. And Nasir Watkins, he's probably done. After getting some quality early playing time. So, yeah, it's and the thing was, too, like it was such – you talked about it being almost like insurance, and that was a good way to put it because it felt like it was the lock of all locks. You know, it's one thing to be recruiting Keontae since he was in seventh grade, but, hell, Vince has known Emil Wagner even longer because he was recruiting – his brother Ahmad when Ahmad was in high school, you know?
They recruited Wayne High School for a long time. Now, none of the players have come down here and really kind of turned into anything, but got Tobias Gilliam out of there, Roland Walder, Roland Walder, and then one or two more.
They tried getting that Blue Smith. They recruited him hard out of there. I don't know if he ever ended up doing anything.
So it's a high school that they seem to have a pretty good relationship with. Thought you had the kind of the trump card with Emil and coaching Emil being on your staff.
Or Ahmad on your staff, yeah.
Yeah, Ahmad, excuse me.
Yeah.
And then you get the last visit from him.
I mean, he was there four days before
for the Tennessee game.
Yeah.
You would think if you have a family tie like that, he would at least give you kind of a buffer if he wasn't gonna come there.
Or a heads kind of, up. Like, right. That was what was also crazy about it is, I mean, we were even being – I don't think he told anybody beforehand, but, like, Penn State people, they were like, well, it's not us. It's got to be Kentucky. So, it was a complete blindside.
No one knew. I think the recruiting guys, like, in-depth guys probably found out, like, an hour before it happened. Or 30 minutes before it happened.
Yeah.
It sounded like he like made his decision that morning and told him where he was going. His family where he was going. That's what that sounded like. Yeah. And there's no shame really in losing a recruiting battle to Notre Dame for offensive linemen. Like if you go and look at their roster, it's just 4 and 5 stars, top 150 recruits over and over again. And all kinds of guys playing in the NFL along the offensive line from Notre Dame. Like it is we talk about the big blue wall, but that, like Notre Dame might be the best O-line school in the country when it comes to pumping out talent. Joe Moore, who the award's named after, coached at Notre Dame. Like, that's kind of what they do there.
Yeah. Just in recent years, Quentin Nelson, who he said he models his game after. You've got Conklin that's out at San Francisco. Like, they've done well. They've done well. It's not just a fart in the wind. But man, it just felt like you were right there. You had the pitch. Hey, we can have the best offensive line class in America. Come on down here. And now you're looking at a situation where the Kentucky's still getting guys from Ohio, but they still have never really gotten the big guys from Ohio. Well,
that is twofold, because Ryan Day's just made recruiting Ohio more important than Urban did. So Ohio State is gobbling up more guys than they usually did. But there's other schools getting in there. Minnesota's getting in there winning some. Indiana got a four-star running back out of Cincinnati this year. There's some more programs getting in there that Kentucky, you know, whether they're going head-to-head against these guys or not, they're just not – seems like they're not making as big a splash. But also, you know, they're recruiting other areas too. Like Kentucky's become more important. Summerall's getting down to Alabama, Mississippi, South Georgia. But there's no hiding from that Ohio hasn't been what it was at the first part of the Stoops era.
Yeah.
If you just do top 200 recruits, they haven't gotten one from Ohio since Lynn Bolden. Mill Wagner would have snapped that streak.
Mm-hmm. Is Bolden the only one now?
Top 200 recruit.
Yeah.
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah.
I have to dig into some of the earlier classes, but.
Yeah, and, you know, the numbers get a little hairy the further you go back. But nevertheless, it was tough, man. It was a surprise. And then you had that backed up with, I think, Wilt Fong dropped that Keontae was going to Florida State like an hour after that news happened. You're like, whoa. What's going on here? Now, it's not over until the fat lady sings. And then, you know, within an hour, they're offering some other offensive tackles. You know, the Steelers offensive line coach's kid, which, you know, I don't know. And I don't even know if you want to take a swing, on any of those guys at that point either. Like, don't you just go to the portal?
Yeah, you got to be careful getting in that situation, because then
you get stuck
with a scholarship you don't really want. So you have to be careful there.
Yeah.
But a lot of it depends on how comfortable are you in David Wolobol to play tackle right now? Like, that's probably a conversation they need to have. DeAndre Buford, where is he at? Can he play next year, potentially start for us? Stuff like that. You just have to be. But, yeah, I mean, it's on the offensive side of the ball, it's going from, man, they're really hitting everything they need to, and then now you're hitting everything but tackle. It's just like a huge crater that you have to deal with. That's only if you lose Goodwin. If you don't lose Goodwin, it's fine. But that's
you're holding on for dear life.
Right.
Yeah, right.
Like I said, you just got to – survive through this the rest of the season, and you have to get him on campus in December. You just have to. If they don't, they're not going to get him. If they do, they're going to have a really good chance to get him. But if you don't get him on campus in December, it's not going to happen.
Yeah, the going to every home game kind of loses its effect at that point, which, he's not going to be there this Saturday. So they're missing out on one going out of Texas A&M to see Jimbo, who it was pretty emphatic that he's not going anywhere because of the class he's recruiting. They're recruiting. This is kind of, I think, the A&M pipe dream that they've been hoping for. The class he's putting together is whew.
He's improved their average star rating every year since he's been there. Every recruiting class has gone up.
Dude,
it's only a matter of time before they break through.
He sounds like such a damn recruiter too, you know? Mm-hmm. I tell you what, he just cracks me up. He cracks me up. And before we get off of recruiting, though, the miss was quickly followed by a hit where the Cats got a commitment from Elijah Reed, the cornerback from PRP. That is I like his story a lot, Luckett, because he's one of the few kids that reclassified and it worked. And it kind of worked because of a multitude of circumstances. You know, he was playing receiver. 6'3 kid playing receiver, wasn't catching a ton of passes. And he goes, hey, you know, you have – the skills to be you have what they want from a defensive back. Why don't you just try playing corner? Moves over to corner, puts enough on tape where Kentucky's like, let's go, let's do this. And even though he is a year older, he's a fifth year COVID year guy. It's almost like how in the NBA draft, they don't value the older guys as much as the young guys. That isn't the same when this kid is new to the position. Now, you might want to get a guy, like you're going to have to get some guys who can help you more so right away next year as well. So you're probably going to have to hit the portal at some point. But he does check a lot of the boxes that they liked in guys early on in the Mark Stoops era: physical, long, lengthy cornerbacks, and that's exactly what Reed does at 6'3".
Yeah, and I need to look up the measurables on DeCarlos Nicholson.
He's I think 6'2".
Pledge, yeah. So it seems like the blueprint's changing there a little bit. You know, you go back and look at some of these recent recruits Klinkskill had at corner.
Huey, little guy.
Yeah, Maxwell Hairston, who we don't know what's going on there.
Yeah, he's, for all intents and purposes, gone.
And then 2020, who do they have? I don't think they had Andrew Phillips. But, yeah, I mean, I just – yeah, I think the model is fitting him. I'm not against taking one from a Louisville place. I'm getting in there and taking a guy, especially who has traits like him. You know,
that, right, right.
They can help build it at home, and you don't know if PRP is going to have or, you know, aspirations again where he works out.
Yeah.
It could help you down the road, and obviously it can't hurt you with Keontae.
Hell, Brandon Dunn and Taywan Taylor, they played in the NFL for a long time and went to U of L in Western Kentucky.
Yeah, for him, like you said, it's just he's a project a little bit, you know. He's going to get into it, and we're probably not going to hear from him for 2 years. So
yeah, yeah. And he's also, too, I think that the transfer rule, the kind of the other exception they have where you can take on more transfers and give them scholarships this year, is significant. If it's a normal year, I don't know if they take flyers on, you know, kind of like your projects, so to speak, like your Eli Coxes that are turning out to be really quality football players for you. That's the one thing about the transfer portal is you're going to get a lot of 18, 19 player classes and then another five or six are portal guys. You don't have to do that this year, which is significant. And I was having a conversation with somebody the other day. I'm not sure. They do have some barriers on when you get to use those. So, like, I think to get seven additional transfer portal guys, your guys have to depart and go into the portal after a certain time period. And whenever that is, I think Stoops has asked, like, hey, guys, can y'all just wait till this point? You know, we aren't going to – this is the only thing we're asking. Like, wish you the best on your way, but just wait till this date so we can make sure we can – hit our kind of quota thing. Because there's going to be some guys that
– Jaquez Jones, cough, cough. Jaquez Jones, got to make room for him next year.
Yeah, yeah. Which, don't read too much into that, Luckett. Do not read into it. But he was not on the senior day ceremony list. And I think there's a couple guys on there that could, you know, they could want to come back. You know, does Square want to play a fifth-year football? He's a four-year
Jordan
guy.
Jordan Wright missed a lot of snaps this year.
So did Bully, you know? Like, they just guys now, were very injured this year, you know?
I will say this about Bully. Bruce Feldman just wrote a piece where he kind of embedded with Jim Nagy and the Senior Bowl crew.
Yeah.
And watched – they went through all the players on their board and watched tape, and he wrote about them. And one of the guys he pulled up and wrote about was McCall. And this was why he was out. They were saying, you know, we're really going to watch him these last three games while he's out, because he's, you know, he's probably a fourth or fifth round pick because of what he brings and kind of his twitchiness. So me reading that is McCall, as long as McCall's not bad these last few games, it sounds like he's probably going to be gone.
Gotcha.
So I wouldn't, he's one. I thought that originally, but now seeing that some scouts takes, I think he's probably going to be gone. He's going to go to that Senior Bowl, and you're going to see him go off the board, fourth, fifth round.
Kind of Fred Rand or Bohannon. Bohannon was fifth round, I believe, correct?
Mm-hmm. Well, they actually, if you read the article, they don't say Bohannon's name, but they say, like, that McCall has a higher ceiling than him, than a guy that was drafted high last year or late last year in the round, which was Quentin Bohannon because he played in front of him.
Right, right, right.
So you could – I think he went to six, I think. Because they had that run of players in the sixth round. I think you could see McCall go fourth or fifth.
Man, just as we're getting into senior day stuff, kind of looking ahead, because he'll be involved in that. There's 22 guys going through ceremonies, three seniors that are super seniors that did it last year, and they're like, we're not going to do this again. One of those is Luke Fortner, and it's just so shocking to me. Fortner's first game was that Southern Miss game. That feels like an eternity ago. But yet, he was there for the beginning, the lowest of lows, the highest of highs. There's quite a few of these dudes where you're just like, you can't believe that. Wow, they're still like, Fortner was here for the Lamar game. Lamar's already come and gone, and
they were in Benny Snell's recruiting jersey. Class.
That's crazy.
He was in Benny Snell's recruiting class.
That's crazy. Absolutely crazy. I love too right now that Kenny Pickett committed to Temple when Matt Rhule was the head coach. He was recruited by Josh Heupel at Missouri and North Carolina by Larry Fedora. So, like, there's Kenny some guys out there that have been there for a while.
Kenny Pickett is a case study I want to get into in the offseason. Because, you know, his offensive coordinator was Liam Cohen's head coach at UMass. That offensive coordinator got Scott Woodward his start in coaching. Kenny Pickett, older guy. In his third year with Whipple, I believe, just now he's taken off. And now, like, we could potentially see that with Levis. Like, that's – I'm going to go back and break down his numbers, like,
those year first by year. 2 years.
And then, yeah. Because I think that could be a blast off we see with Levis next year. So that's going to be one of my offseason projects. But, yeah, that he's been a guy I've been watching closely because they've just – you know, the offenses, I would assume, have some similarities. And he's really taken off this year.
I'm going to just warn our listeners too. The conversations are going to be a little bit more disjointed and a lot of like, oh, you said something. I'm running with it. And the thing you brought up kind of about development down the road. So this is going to be kind of off the walls. You know, just prepare for it. It's New Mexico State. We're sandwiched in between New Mexico State and Vanderbilt for crying out loud. All right. We're not going to be having some sort of long-winded Tennessee discussion like we did a week ago. But you brought up just the development over the years, and it does go back to Fortner because Fortner was on my radio show this morning, Kentucky Roll Call. If you don't listen to it, you should do it. Luckett shares all of his bad picks there. You're what, 8-5-25 something, man? Really bad picks on there, Luckett.
Yeah, but I'm a hot 8-25.
There you go, a hot 8-25. Well, when you start 0-16, you know you can. There's only one way to go, and that's up. But because Stoops on his call-in show had a pretty decent response when asked about, you know, how come there's not so much wide zone? He said, you know, some of it's the teams we play. They put a lot of stress on you. Some of it's recruiting. And in Fortner, the way that he described it is he's like, you know, we spent 5 years doing the same offense. And this spring, it was all about, like, we were just trying to learn the plays, you know. So we figured out wide zone against essentially the basics, but you aren't seeing the basics out there every single time. And I think wide zone in particular, where it's really boom or bust, if you try to do that a lot and you're getting gashed, like, you're just screwed.
There's going to be more tackles for loss and runs for no gain or one gain because of that. But it's also going to create creases too, where you can create more chunk plays. So, yeah. It's going to be more glitchy when you're not really good at it.
And part of that is like, we just don't have the reps. So like, there's guys that it took a long time just to learn the basics that, you know, we just kind of fell back in the inside zone, you know, and the personnel fit, you know, Chris Rodriguez is still getting about 2.5 yards before he's getting touched. And then he's getting, you know, 4 yards after contact like that. Those are his averages right now. It's still a good rushing attack. It just hasn't been what we've expected. And I think that's kind of the next steps for this offense, kind of like seeing Levis connect with Wandale in the double move. Like, those were next steps that we wanted to see this year. We didn't reach all of the, like, not all of the boxes were checked, but a lot of them have been. So I think if you do look at the offense from, you know, 10,000 feet up, and I guess in particular into that Vanderbilt game, you really got to like what you've seen so far.
Yeah, I mean, right now, to this point in the year, it's all about growth from the quarterback to me. Like, you kind of know who you are at this point. Let's see Levis stack some games together, building for next year. Because I think he's had moments, but then he's had some, like, two steps forward, step back.
Yeah, yeah.
Kind of things.
And it really has been two games at a time and then one back. Yeah. It lives up to that saying all too
well. So, for him, it's can he put 3-4 games together here at the end of the season? And then you can really – because the whole thing's going to be built around, like, you're building the whole thing around him next year.
Mm-hmm.
You're still going to have what you want to do and whatnot, but you're going to probably throw the ball for the most you have since Andre Woodson has been here next year. And so, like, it's – you need him to be good. And you've seen some signs. Like, I think he played really good against Tennessee, and I think he played really good against Vanderbilt, all things considered. And so those were good to see. And I want to see him keep it rolling moving forward. And that's really what the season – like, have a good game against New Mexico State, play good against Louisville, and then let's see who the bowl opponent is and set expectations from there.
Yeah, yeah. It the Vanderbilt game, the offense in the first half, was fun. I mean, 16 plays, 28 points. One of those is a defensive touchdown, but still, to
touchdown,
have 12
touchdown,
yards
touchdown,
to play,
field goal,
yeah,
first four possessions.
And you didn't have an incompletion until you got down to the 8-yard line and you start throwing fades into the end zone, you know, to 5'9" guys.
Yeah. But like I said, like at that point in the game, you know, you didn't want to hammer away with Rodriguez. I didn't mind it. Like that game can be a lot of practice situations. When you're in a blowout game like that, you can, all right, let's work on our red zone
other
passing
stuff
game.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I didn't necessarily mind that. Like, man, it was 31-3. You know, end of the second quarter, they've got the ball. Levis takes a sack when you cannot take a sack. Like, you cannot take a sack there on 1st and 10 and 2-minute drill. You know, Stoops plays it conservative. They throw a Hail Mary. I don't know, I know people got mad, but, like, what's the point of, like, all right, let's really stick it to them here and go up 38-3 before halftime. You're getting the ball back to start the half.
Yeah. That sack, it was all Stoops needed to see.
But
to
you're
be
up, like, my thing is, like, you're up 31-3. And I tweeted this after the game. Like, Mark Stoops is not in this game to beat people by 50 points.
No, no.
So if that's what you want, like, you're just going to, like, be upset a lot. You just are. I mean, you just need to accept that, right? Like, you're just gonna, you know, it's like a guy who drives. You know, this guy doesn't go over 55 miles an hour. So if you ride with him, you're not getting there any faster. So, like, this is what he is. So, and then overall, Nick, like, they had 9 possessions, man, and 2 of them were into halves. They scored on 5 of their 7 possessions.
Yeah,
and then they had 2 weird penalties.
Yeah, those
so like
were bad.
They really had 1 bad possession in that game. It was that when they got the ball, they're on 13. They're in the they're in the beginning, like mid fourth quarter. That was the only bad possession they had all night to me, because they played it smart at the end of the half, and then they ran out the clock at the end of the game, and then they went 14 plays, 61 yards, kicked the field goal. But like they're milking clock. Like they had 2 possessions over 5 minutes long, and Vandy had 3 possessions over 5 minutes long.
Yeah. That second half flew by.
So really the defense couldn't, and Clark Lee's like, you know, Vandy wants to play that close. Like they are very much in moral victory standpoint of their rebuild. Let's keep it close, make a couple plays, get out of here somewhat healthy, and then like build on it. During the broadcast, when I went back and watched, Mike Golick Jr. was talking about how Clark Lee's had to, you know, I've had to take, and like, we have to take the small victories and really celebrate them because we're taking our lumps in games. So it's like, if you have 2 good practices in a row, great job, like really good job. If you, you know, hold a team to 34 points, that's a win. So I just, man, like you play a limited possession game. You don't force turnovers. You know, that's just what you're going to kind of be. I just, you know, and Mark Stoops is not in the all gas, no brakes neighborhood. So,
yeah. And
you're not going to have a lot of 50-7 wins unless you're like just, you know, you're forcing 3 or 4 turnovers. And another thing, Nick, no 40-yard plays since the Florida game. Like they're not getting cheap scores. Every score they're getting, they're having to work for a little bit. They're not getting, oh, here comes a 70-yard, you know, run play. Here comes a 70-yard pass play. Here comes a 51. They're just not, you know, they're getting explosive, but they're not getting –
oh, you're splitting hairs here too, though, because Wandale's catch was 39 yards. You son of a gun.
Okay, well, we have one play of 35 plus yards since the Florida game.
Yeah, yeah. I will say that I think there is something to Stoops having some sympathy for people in a rebuild, And when you think about the coaches that he hates the most, it's the guys that run up the score. It's the James Franklins of the world. It's the Bobby Petrinos of the world. Because a lot of that, I mean, hell, even Heupel's like that, where he's going to beat the hell out of really bad teams. You know, like there's.
Yeah, I get the sense that Stoops didn't really like Heupel. Because they do have a working relationship, and he wouldn't say anything. Well, and there's also this there. There's a big, like Heupel has a big for disdain for his brother now because Bob fired him in Oklahoma.
Hmm.
So there's that there too.
Interesting. But because either way.
Because Oklahoma had a reunion for that national championship team and Heupel didn't come.
Are you serious?
Yeah. And Heupel hasn't been back since. He doesn't talk to anybody in Oklahoma. I read something on that over the summer.
Interesting.
So that's probably
plays into it as well.
Yeah.
But I do think that if you have watched Mark Stoops coach a Kentucky football team for the last eight and three quarters years, and you think that he's in the business of covering big numbers, then you've been watching the wrong team. I don't know what else to tell you. Like, I'm sure that was the source of a lot of disgruntlement. I'm sure some of it is leftover ill will from the Tennessee game because you're just fat, you know, you're going to be angry about it. And that was why we talked about it being the Duke basketball game being significant, is it would give Kentucky fans something to feel good because you weren't playing anybody on the basketball team until December 11th, and you aren't going to get a football win over anybody that matters until you play an average Louisville team on the road on Thanksgiving weekend. It was going to be a long time. You had the great start, but then there's naturally this, like, the wind kind of.
I mean, I don't know what else. You're up 31-3. You went to halftime, and
yeah,
your
game was over. The game was over. I can't have the energy to get fired up over stuff like that.
And they scored a touchdown on two fourth downs. Oh, one, man. Carrington Valentine didn't get his hand. He kind of loses the guy in zone coverage. And then the other one, they go to like a zero blitz. They man up, and the guy just, you know, big body receiver beats Carrington inside on slant for a touchdown. You know, if you make one of those plays, you feel a lot different about the game.
That first one too, like I thought the ball was going to get knocked down like three times. There was dudes just like so close to getting
Katie
it.
Katie
so
McDaniel,
many times.
Who I thought played well, almost got his paw on it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I don't. The pass defense is still like a worry. put it lightly. Yeah. But the pass rush is really coming on. I think Nick, they're back in the top 30 in sack rate nationally. So like. We talked about getting sacks all season. That's really kind of cured
under the radar
last month. Yeah. They've been really good about, you know, getting pressure, and they're sending some blitzes, but not a lot. But the pass defense is a big, big concern. So we'll see how that works out over the next 2 weeks, but their run defense is fine. It's going to get better with McCall in there. And then offensively, I think they're doing some good things. It's just the pass defense is that big bugaboo, and they're just not forcing turnovers. They haven't forced multiple turnovers in a game this season.
That's crazy.
Kentucky's won the turnover margin in one game this season, plus one against LSU.
I mean, it's remarkable, Luckett, that we talked about that pendulum swinging. They went from, I think it was second to only Arkansas in the
led
country.
Led the SEC in takeaways last year.
So they did lead it in takeaways last year.
I think they were like second. They were second interceptions.
It was tied for six nationally, which means that like one team had, you know, basically tops in the country for all intents and purposes, maybe one less, give or take. And then all the way to last the following year in takeaways. It's just remarkable. But shout out to Jalen Geiger. Getting his first career start, making the most out of it. I thought the play he actually made before the interception might have been more impressive, even though the running back might have got a little bit more and got past it. It was good to see just somebody attacking gaps like that, attacking the hole like that.
And back to the turnover, like you see some of these teams around them, Nick. Kentucky's minus 12. Arizona is minus 14. They're one of the worst teams in the Power Five. Southern Miss has won one game, minus 11. Florida International can't afford pads, and it's minus 11. San Jose State's not having a great year, minus 11. Indiana, we know how the year they're having, minus 10. Stanford's really bad, minus 9. There's not a lot of great – there's not great company around where they're at. Florida, minus 8. you know, the kind of year they're having. So that the fact that they've been able to win games with all this going on is really
remarkable.
Yeah. Remarkable. I mean, to be honest.
It's impressive.
And so, like, that's why I'm going in every game, like, if you just split turnovers, that's a win to me. Because you're just not forcing takeaways. So just if you can split turnovers, you know, take it to the bank. And, you know, you split it against Vandy, but you got the pick six, so you obviously won that battle. But, yeah, man, it's just been the craziest thing that they can't get turnovers. It's wild. And then Vanderbilt, I think they fumbled three times, and like two or three times in the game didn't recover one of them. So, I mean, it's just they're not getting the fumble look, and they're not getting the ball production in the passes. So, like, it's just maybe hopefully they'll, you know, hopefully it all – cure itself in the Louisville game. They'll get four or five of them.
Malik Cunningham just starts
we'll all be laughing on
Central fumbling
Street.
The ball. Oh, man. That'll be a lot of fun. Almost as fun as this commercial break. One thing, Luckett, about the final two opponents, you got New Mexico State and Vanderbilt. Or no, they did play Vanderbilt. Louisville. Gosh. At least New Mexico State's going to throw it around enough to challenge the, like, you know, I'm fine with these guys kind of getting put through the ringer a little bit at this point, because you might as well get battle tested instead of getting some false confidence. You know, I still don't get the sense that Drew Phillips, they're ready to throw him in there yet, but at this point, you know, why the hell not? So I'm curious, like, at New Mexico State.
I think
State,
that should tell you a lot.
Yeah. Yeah,
now, he missed a lot of practice, but that should, you know, they're not sabotaging themselves over there.
Right, right, exactly. So they're at least going to be tested a lot. And I do love that New Mexico State, there is some sweet irony that Luke Fortner's senior day is going to be, and I should say Luke Fortner, Josh Ali, and Justin Rigg, they're seeing their, no, I guess it would be just Rigg, who's the only other one that was in
the Devontae Robinson.
Robinson was as well. Okay. Mm-hmm. So those are the big three super seniors that were in that class on that team for that game. And New Mexico State, that was the game that got this whole thing rolling.
Right.
You know?
Well, they are. I wrote it down. I can find it right quick. The record. I don't know if you got the full.
I had it pulled. It was 44-29 since then.
Yeah, since 2016, but they were 1-2 entering that New Mexico State
game.
Yeah.
So take away
43-27.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then 25-24 in SEC play since that game.
Yeah. I mean, it's remarkable. And the fact that it was a New Mexico, just New Mexico State, it's such a random team, but you put Benny Snell in there. He gets four touchdowns. He had a buck 20 in that game. Steven Johnson comes in for Drew Barker. I think Barker just threw two passes and was like, nope, back's not working. Johnson comes in, throws three tutties. You got Boom Williams making big Boom Williams plays. And that's where the seeds were planted to develop this identity that Kentucky has formed in the trenches. That was the year that Kentucky was rotating. They played nine guys on the offensive line. They were rotating a ton of guys.
And that was, I believe that was DJ Elliott's last game as coordinator. I think Stoops took over play calling, defensive coordinator play calling after that game.
Yeah, and they gave up 42 points in Mexico State.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure after that game, Elliott got demoted.
And I think most importantly, we got to know what kind of football Mark Stoops was going to play at Kentucky. He had the guys that he could run the football. He could play good enough defense, bend, don't break, and then having just enough explosive plays with Jeff Badette, Juice Williams at wide receivers to keep teams honest. So you could keep running the ball. You know, like they won 4 out of 5. And I think the one loss in that stretch was Alabama. And that's when Jonathan Allen was saying that was the most physical team he played. And as Luke
that's
said,
been the best offense of the Stoops era, probably until this season.
Yeah.
Was that 2016 group?
Luke said, you know, like if you want to show just how far the program's gone, first game lost to Southern Miss. And now we're pissed off that we aren't 11-1. And we're going to hopefully end 9-3. So that's kind of where they're at. It's just the kind of bookending storytelling kind of aspect of this, because you still have that physical identity in the trenches where you're running the football, but you are almost getting back to that 2016 ways where you do have some consistent quarterback play, that there's some running out there available, as well as some explosiveness where you've got at least a deep threat or two to be able to extend the ball vertically. So it feels like Kentucky is getting to where they want to be. Like, this is a good wheelhouse where, I mean, let's face it, 8-4 is the floor now, right? I mean, that can kind of give or take.
I said it before the season, any year UK, you go 8-4, 4-4 in the SEC. It's a really good season. You know, one of those losses is probably coming to the war daddy in your division. Another loss is probably coming to at least one West opponent. And then you're losing two more games maybe inside your division. But odds are you're beating teams you really want to beat that every year, because that includes a Louisville win, you know, most times, or sometimes it's going to include a Tennessee win.
Or a Florida win, you know,
sprinkle a Florida win. Those. So, yeah, like, that's always a good season. But, like, this is the great part of the sport, is you get in it, you start getting in the weekly grind, and then opportunities start popping up. It happens every year, you know. It's a lot of survive in advance. You get through portions of your – like Oklahoma State, Nick, if you go back, they were bad the first five games of the year.
Yeah,
they
should have lost to Boise.
Barely surviving. Now they're on the cusp of a Big 12 title. Minnesota, when they had their big year under P.J. Fleck, barely surviving. One possession win. Then they look up, they're playing for the Big Ten West against Wisconsin last game of the year. Like, that's just kind of what the sport is sometimes, and that's why you always need a schedule like Kentucky schedules, in my opinion. It's going to create opportunities like that. When you kind of go through it like they did this year, you had a great opportunity. It's just now you peel back the onion a little bit, and it's just there's about five or six SEC teams right in the same tier as Kentucky. You got Georgia and Alabama, and then you got everyone else, and you're going to have like 4-9-3. 5-8-4 teams.
Yeah.
Like almost half the league's 8-4, 9-3. So that's like between 15 and 35 ranked. You're all right there. And so Kentucky gave themselves a chance.
Right.
And, you know, you felt like you let it slip away. Really, the Tennessee game is the one.
That's the big one.
But like I say, if you play in a lot of one possession games, man, you're just going to have games where you don't get the call. Yeah. You don't get the right bounce. Or you don't get the fourth down conversion.
And here's one thing that I think is important now. So there's this guy on Twitter, his stuff got, he had a thread that kind of went viral today, Joel Anderson. And it was in the fallout from Justin Fuente getting fired. He's getting a $10 million buy. And the number is, public schools have paid $46 million in buyouts to fired football coaches, and we aren't even at the end of the year. That excludes Southern Cal and TCU, who are private institutions. And the point that Anderson made was, why
someone's got to go 5-7? Like, I know what he was saying.
Yeah, right. Like when did we get to the point that every program is just unhappy with when being in the middle of the road?
When the coordinator started making millions of dollars.
And I think it's also coincides with the internet, where your anger is much more amplified than what it was before. Like, it used to be, there was this guy. No idea what this guy's name was, but when we would go to Kentucky games at Commonwealth Stadium, section 226, there was a guy that was always mad sitting in front of us, no matter what happened. Everything stunk. You go down at halftime, you meet with my dad's buddies in the concourse, and one of those guys was just always mad. And then you just kind of like, that guy's an idiot, you know, and you just move on to the next. Well, now those idiots are a little bit louder, and they get to talk to each other, and they have their own community of idiots that are just screaming mad that you aren't winning every game 70-7, you know? And I think that there's that has to play some part in it, that we can't just accept a 17-point SEC win on the road.
Yeah, I mean, it's Tennessee. I mean, like, it's Tennessee.
But in college football in general, though, like, there is a sense, like,
the problem is, Nick, like if you could do it perfectly, you would just trade in some of those South Carolina, Missouri wins for more Tennessee wins.
Yeah, that's true.
It's a totally different conversation. But it's the Tennessee thing. It just is that you've had – the better program. Like, going into 2016, Tennessee was like, it was like their breakthrough moment. All right, Butch Jones stacked some recruiting classes together, We've set it up. Florida's down. They got McElwain. We don't think he's that good. It's our Georgia just hired Kirby Smart, but we don't. You don't know about him. This is our time to go win some division titles, compete for a playoff bid. This is our time. They go out, and you know what happens. From there, they implode. They go through a messy coaching search, hire Pruitt. Pruitt has a mess, leaves it for him. 800 players leave from the transfer portal. During that time, Kentucky was just doing this steady build. And you look at the records, Kentucky's just been better than them over that time everywhere, but when they play head-to-head. And so I think that's a lot of it. People were really upset about that Tennessee game. You know, and then the lose of the way – I mean, we've seen, you know, you invent ways to lose to that team, it seems like, to steal Jeff Drummond's line, who told me in the press box. But, like, it just – there's always – it's always something weird. Goal line stands.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Overtimes, field goals blocked, run for 400 yards down there, but lose by 13. This year, you know, they don't stop you the whole game and then stop you when they absolutely have to. Give up 270-yard plays, which is so uncharacteristic of this defense and how they're built. You know, it's just like – it's just head-scratching, but that's just kind of the game, you know, football. And then there's also the they haven't beat them basketball a lot either here lately. Like,
yeah,
Tennessee kind of has Kentucky's number right now. You know, no one really wants to bring that up, but and that's very frustrating for the fan base here.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm wondering if college football as a whole, too, I think that just folks are very happy with the climb and they're okay with a dip or two, but it's the slowly. So, like at TCU, you know, Gary Patterson, legend there. He's got a statue of himself there. He makes country music videos while he's there. But they had been – it wasn't just a year or two. Like, it was kind of meddling, and it wasn't really going anywhere.
Yourself as become the hero, but if you stay long enough, eventually you're going to become the villain.
Oh, man, there we go. It's movie like it there, dropping the Dark Knight lines. Love it.
So, like, with Patterson, man, like, he did not handle this name image likeness stuff well at all. And he had a bunch of put his foot in the mouth moments in the media. You know, so, like that doesn't make sense. Like, why would you fire the best coach in school history? Like, Louisville. Now, Petrino's a wholly different case, but, like, they were very quick to just go ahead and kick Bobby to the curb, even though he won a bunch of games for them. You know, it's just, but it's a different sport now, man. There's so much more money to be had. Everybody has resources. They think they should win. But like you said, somebody's got to go 5-7. Like, somebody's got to finish last in this. Like, somebody's got to finish last in the SEC West. Like, not every team can go 8-4, 9-3.
They're trying to this year, though. There's a six-way tie scenario.
Non-conference scheduling is very important. You need, you know, if you're not cream of the crop, you probably need to make sure you're setting yourself up for wins. But, like, you know, I think it's byproduct because you're right. Everybody has a voice, but also, man, the money is just, I mean, they're making a lot of money.
Yeah. And the thing is where like
Neil Brown's entering a year next year where he's going to be on the hot seat. Like, they're not going to a bowl game this year. He's going to be like one game under 500 entering year four. You know, you got to have your breakthroughs. When you have a chance to break through, you really got to kick that door down. Kentucky and Stoops did that. Went 10-3 in 2018. This will be another big, potentially 10-win year if they can close it strong. Got to make those years count.
Yeah, and the money thing, that's kind of because it's Jimmy Sexton time of year. It's kind of what got Fuente in trouble and got things off to a rocky relationship there. Even though things weren't being great in general, that really set the tone. You're going to see something similar with Scott Satterfield where Louisville fans aren't used to this kind of middle of the road.
Plays, yeah.
Yeah. So it's happening. It's an epidemic around college football. And I just don't know when when they're going to.
Cincinnati's going to face the same thing in 6 years.
When are just administrators going to quit paying, like quit agreeing to these stupid buyouts? Like. why build those buyouts into the contract? Just pay them a lot of money, but then not the buyout. You're paying them to fire them. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
Oh man, I don't get it.
Jimmy Sexton created quite the hustle. I know that, man.
You know what my favorite hustle is, though, like it, and it's not even a hustle because it's legal in most states, and it's a great way to be entertained while watching your favorite sporting events, and that's Prize Picks. Because right now, I've got my Prize Picks app pulled up, and we've got Maxion tonight. Toledo is in action, so that means I'm going Bryant Kobach over 107 rushing yards. And then I'm really tempted, Luckett. I really want to keep riding the Oscar Tshiebwe high. His line is 14.5 rebounds, but I might have to fade the big O. He can still have a great night and get under 14.5 boards, and I still catch money by using Prize Picks. If you download it today, download the app, or just log in online. You know, that's a very easy way to go as well. Log in, use the promo code PERSONNEL, and you get to double your deposit. It's very simple. Download Prize Picks. Have some fun today, right? It's Tuesday night. Let's have a party. If not, save it till Wednesday. There's Maxion on Wednesday. We've got football on Thursday. Scott and his Tots will be playing Duke on Thursday in the David Cutcliffe retirement game, potentially. So maybe you can fade Scott going back to his hometown turf, or you can be all in on a Matt Ryan revenge game whenever the Falcons play the Patriots Thursday night. There's a ton of potential when you play with Prize Picks. I do want to see real quick. We don't have Saturdays.
A lot of sports on the tube.
It'd be nice if we could have a, because we can get some fun numbers for UK to put up Saturday in the first half. So just something to keep in mind. But get Prize Picks. Use the promo code PERSONNEL today. Man, there is a lot of sports on the tube. Like it. Did you been watching any college basketball?
I watched first half of UCLA, Villanova.
That was too late for me. I was,
but outside of Kentucky, asleep. I watched the end of the Louisville Furman game, the overtime.
Oh yeah, you had to watch that. But that's high quality.
Outside of that in Kentucky, I haven't, like, the first Champions Classic game, I maybe watched 3-4 possessions.
Yeah, it was bad. I did watch Illinois Marquette last night. That was a lot of fun. Big time atmosphere. I enjoyed it very much.
Yeah, what are Gonzaga and Texas doing playing on a college? Well, both, even, like, I don't know. Why are they, like, man, if, you know, that's fine, I guess. Three or four years ago, when I was more in, you know, staying up late like that, I probably would have been all in on that. But
you're an old man now, though. You know, you're on the other side of 30.
Unique scheduling going on there.
I'm excited to have a lot of sports on the tube. We've got Feast Week next week. We're going to be feasting on sports, on all sorts of food.
Maui and Las Vegas.
It's not. Why couldn't they just do it in Maui too? Like,
they're bringing the Vegas, or the Maui team to Vegas.
Good for them. Yeah, good for them. But I don't know why they just don't go to Hawaii. Hawaii is in the.
I don't know.
They're a United State. Like, this isn't.
I'm not getting in that. Yeah, whatever. But Egg Bowl Thursday, next Thursday, Nick.
Dude, that's going to be
going to be a very important Egg Bowl for Kentucky.
Yes, please explain. You wrote about this on KSR. Please explain.
Essentially, the SEC could have a thing where they have kind of like 6 or 7 teams ranked, but only 2 in like the top 12. So you could have like Ole Miss, A&M, Kentucky, Mississippi State, and potentially Arkansas, like all kind of like just lumped together. So if that happens, you know, obviously Alabama's getting either a college football playoff or New Year's Six bid. But if SEC doesn't get another one, that drops them all down a tier. And so pretty much Citrus Bowl gets first pick outside of that. So they're going to take the top-ranked team. That's how it always works. They're going to take the top-ranked team. That's going to be either Texas A&M or Ole Miss. If Ole Miss loses to Mississippi State. Now, if they finish 10-2, they're going to be inside the top 10. They're going to get a New Year's Six bid. Because why that's important, because then that's going to make A&M take the Citrus Bowl bid, and then Kentucky's going to be the next best available. They'll get the Outback Bowl. Haven't been in the Outback Bowl in 20-something years. Yada, yada, yada. But if that doesn't happen, Ole Miss probably going to go to the Citrus Bowl. A&M hasn't been to the Outback Bowl either since they've been in the league. So – Outback Bowl is probably going to pick them. A&M can't go to the Texas Bowl because they went there 2 years ago, so that takes away an automatic geographical location. It's going to drop Kentucky down. They're just going to send them to Nashville or Memphis. So you need 10-2 Ole Miss, long story short. 9-3 Ole Miss creates a ton of problems.
Yeah, because there's a lot of
– what like hurt us said, was if A&M would have just won, it wouldn't have mattered on Saturday.
Right.
Because even if A&M got lost to LSU, because they would have got the Citrus Bowl bid.
Mm-hmm.
Ole Miss went to the Outback Bowl last year. So they wouldn't have taken them 2 years in a row. Kentucky would just win Outback Bowl in most of those scenarios. Now it gets a little weird. Now it's a group of six, so the Bowls get the pick or whatever, but I'm assuming Outback Bowl is going to take A&M over, higher-ranked A&M team over Kentucky if it came to that situation. So go hottie toddy, gosh almighty.
I did see, too, that there's a scenario. I mean, like you talk about that cluster at the top. There is a scenario for a six-way tie in the SEC West. Now, that includes Arkansas wins over Alabama, which I guess there's, you know, feasible. Like, it's possible.
A lot of good teams this year, man. I just SEC, it just – well, they had two top 10 teams, and then two top 8 to 10 teams, and they have probably six teams from 11 to 35.
And here's the thing. You would say, oh, they got a lot of good teams. Whereas some other person might say, oh, there's so many bad teams. Nobody's good in the SEC. No, that's not it. It's not it. Like, you know, it's not how this works. They've won a lot of football games.
Like Ole Miss is a for Kentucky, Ole Miss is a perfect example. They just won their close games this year. Won at Tennessee when they easily could have lost. Arkansas, if they get the 2-point conversion, or if they don't score 50 points against Arkansas, they lose. You know, you get blown out twice on the road, Ole Miss, against Auburn and Alabama, but yet you win all your close games. And you know, you could go 10-2. And you're going to the Sugar Bowl.
Man, they've been living.
That's what has to happen in these kind of years. Kentucky just did, like the Tennessee game was it. Like, you win that one, and you're going to have a rule. You're probably going to go to the New Year's Six if you just win that one.
Ole Miss has really been skating on thin ice, too, with those close games. I mean, they couldn't get any closer. And then for Lane to show up and start picking games on game day, did we ever hear what his record was? Did he do a good, decent job of picking?
I know he picked Tennessee. I'm assuming he picked Ole Miss, so it's a one-on-one right there.
Oh, man. He's perfect for that place right now. But actually, I'm wondering.
The more he does stuff like that, Nick, the less of a candidate he becomes. Like
elsewhere,
at these other, like you just can't like let's say I don't think he's really a top notch candidate for LSU right now. But say he was and he did that, you can't that's just a hard sell with some of these admins, man. You can't be doing stuff like that. You got to be more of a face.
Oh, I know.
Just walk the company line type thing.
But that's why people love him. That's why people love him.
And he can get away with that at Ole Miss for as long as he wants to.
Yeah, as long as he's not tweeting out pictures of Hugh Freeze in a hospital bed. He's good.
But even if he a goal was him to get back to the NFL, that's like you can't do that. You just can't. You know, if you want to be sideshow at Ole Miss, have fun. But, very interested to see where his career goes from that. Because he could stay at Ole Miss. I mean, he's only 45, 46. He could be at Ole Miss for 15, 16
years. What's wild, man. He's been in our cultural – we've been aware of Lane Kiffin for 15 years, and he still could coach for 30 more.
And do you really think, the Mannings are going to send their pride and joy?
No.
To go play for that guy?
No, not a chance. Not a chance.
Maybe Eli's kid, because Eli's a little goofier. But I don't know what's – kind of what you see from Cooper and Peyton being more serious kind of people. I just don't. Yeah, I don't see it, man.
No, don't see it. Also, I love that there was a lot of our colleagues, because Arch, he don't say anything. I think he's talked to our guy Chad Simmons once or twice, but
he's pretty protected.
Yeah, and he's a reserved kid in general. He doesn't do social media or anything like that. So. The we don't get a lot out of it, and a lot of people just pegged him to Texas because he had a good relationship with Sark at Alabama. But it's like, oh, well, Texas stinks. They lost five in a row. They lost to Kansas in those stupid helmets. Like,
yeah, I don't know where he's going to go. I mean, I don't.
Did you – I know
I thought Clemson, but then – I feel like Clemson has a good shot because I could see them eating up that Dabo Sill. But – you know, they're Clemson's in a weird spot right now, but I guess that could if it was one bad year, they could just maybe get right back in the driver's seat.
Oh man!
And then obviously Alabama is going to be a player there.
Yeah, it's Alabama. Is he in Birmingham? Or is it
outside? Who, Archie?
Arch, yeah.
Arch. He's in New Orleans.
He is. Why did I think he was in Alabama for some reason? Huh. Either way, New Orleans, that'd be a nice spot. Real nice spot to.
Yeah. Depending LSU's coach, they would have a great chance, I would think.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be Mark Stoops. So you're out safe there. And also,
assuming that,
like, if Mel Tucker were to get that job, why would he get Vince Marrow? Other than he supposedly wanted him at Michigan State. It would make sense at Michigan State because that's where Michigan State recruits, is where Vince Marrow recruits.
Marrow makes nearly double of what LSU's recruiting coordinator is making right now.
And Vince has gotten, what, a couple transfers from there, but he doesn't know people in Louisiana. If Mel Tucker is going to try to get a recruiter from Louisiana,
I do think Vince has some chameleon in him where he could just kind of blend in and go recruit anywhere. But what Kentucky's doing right now, what he's getting paid right now, it's top of the line for what his job.
Yep.
I mean, it's top. It's grade A. So, like, at these other schools, like, you have to think if they have, like, if Mel, just say Mel Tucker. Mel Tucker's got to go pay a defensive coordinator. He's got to go pay an offensive coordinator. That's a good chunk of over $1 million. That's a good chunk of his salary pool. He's got to go find a good offensive line coach. And then you got to fill all the other positions. You're at Louisiana. You're going to be able to recruit there anyway. Are you really going to want to go pay $1 million to a guy who's not, like, going to go in and own Louisiana recruiting, I would say, you know? Merrill, like, he's got a great niche here.
Mm-hmm.
Fans know him, love him.
Yeah, really popular.
Mm-hmm. He does a great, like, he's been great for Kentucky football. He's done a great job here. He's owning the state recruiting, and then he's doing his work in other areas where they'll pitch him out to go get transfers or to, you know, make some hay in Ohio. But, like, what Kentucky has for him here is it's going to be better probably than any other place he could go.
Yeah.
He's not going to be the most popular guy on the staff at LSU or blah, 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 yada, yada. But here he's got a niche. He's built up a following. He's a celebrity. He's got it pretty good here.
Yeah.
So it would take a lot is what I'm saying. Like, it would take a big package and an offer, a big daddy offer, for him to leave. And I just don't know if, like, I don't know if that's realistic anywhere else but here, because of kind of the unique relationship he has with Kentucky and with Stoops and the geographic kind of built-in thing he has here.
It's been pretty good. It's been pretty good so far. I don't think Vince is going anywhere. And Kentucky's going to finish with – if they – do what they should do. I think they can finish with a strong class. Hold on.
They get Keontae. It's like no doubt a top 15 class, maybe even top 12. If they get Keontae and Barry and Brown.
Yeah.
And then you throw in another couple, a 4-star or two in there at some point. Like, it's like,
it's going to be Summerall.
It's going to be a big national talking point on December 15th. If they can make it happen. I mean, it's going to be huge.
Part of it is finishing with two wins, winning out, getting a nice Florida bowl game to go to, and then sealing the deal. Our boy Summerall is working on Jacoby Albert, the Auburn commitment too. Josh Josephs was up here for a visit. That feels like more of a pipe dream, but he's out there, you know. So
hold on, still to Fabry, a couple of big, big Tyrese Fabry has kind of gotten quiet. That always felt like someone's going to make a run at him late. Can they hold on the edge out of Pittsburgh?
Mm-hmm.
But overall right now, it's just you got to let the cake bake, let this last month play out. There's going to be surprises. There always are. Both potentially good and bad.
Yep. Try to hold on to the Mississippi JUCO. Yep.
Yeah. I mean, get Keontae on campus in December. You should have a decent shot at getting him. But if you don't, there is going to be sour taste in the mouth. Even if you finish with like a top 25 class, that, you know, you miss out on him and Wagner. That's really tough. But you get them, I think everything's fine. But
yep.
A lot of time left. And recruiting can get crazy, but they're in a good shape. Most guys are solid, so just gotta see how it plays out.
Yep. You gotta finish strong, keep winning on the football field, beat the hell out of Louisville. And then nobody even remembers the subpar second half of Vanderbilt. Nobody. Like every other game down at Vanderbilt.
Yeah, you know, I always say remember November, but like you go and beat Louisville, no one's gonna care. That's why I said the Mississippi State game. No, you beat Tennessee, no one would care.
Yep.
You look up, oh, they lost to, you know, a good Mississippi State team by two touchdowns on the road.
Yep.
You go out and you win these last two games, bring home the Governor's Cup, no one's going to care. It's not a good class. Everybody's talking about next year at that point.
Yeah. I am excited for senior day, though. It'll be fun. It's a worry-free, stress-free day at the Krog, the final one of the year. I can't believe it's already here. Like, it's just time flying by right before our eyes. It felt like we were just getting hyped up for that LSU game. And
it's
like
a sprint, not a marathon. That's for sure.
Kind of stunned at what was happening. And then all of a sudden, boom, last home game of the year is here. The senior day ceremony is going to be taking place, I don't know, 20 minutes or so before kickoff at about 11:40. So,
and then carousel season, baby. It's already started.
It's crazy.
Carousel season.
It's crazy.
So we're going to have a lot to cover once the season's over. Can't wait.
Oh man, yeah, it's gonna be a lot of fun. And hope y'all have fun playing with some prize picks. Use that promo code personnel. Have fun watching some action this week, a little Thursday night football, a little Kentucky basketball, and go Cats, beat the Aggies. We'll see y'all next week on 11 personnel. And go Cats, go Kroger.